At Honda, we like thinking. We think about every last little detail. Take our Civic 1.4 Sport, from its rear parking camera with multi-angle view to its dusk-sensing lights that turn on as daylight fades. Nothing gets missed. We even think about your bank balance, which is why we have a 0% finance offer on our Civic 1.4 Sport. So head down to your local Honda dealer to book a test drive. Selected dealers registered by 30th of September 2016 while stocks last. 0% APR representative terms and conditions at honda.co.uk.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Welcome to Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is your host, Jess Root, and I'm here tonight with Seth Cox, and we are recording our all-Cardinals show as we have come to the actual end of the preseason. We've ended cuts. We now have a 53-man roster, and as Arizona Cardinals head coach Bruce Arians like to say, this is now the Arizona Cardinals. And so for tonight's show, what we're going to talk about is sort of the season preview. But I guess we'll go more into just sort of the personnel moves. There's definitely plenty of talk about in terms of news that's happened. Obviously, we have a 53-man roster. The Arizona Cardinals over the weekend made their final cuts. They will talk about what those cuts were. They have their practice squad all set. And perhaps more importantly, the more surprising news, the biggest news of the weekend was that the Cardinals made a trade. They made a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles to acquire quarterback Matt Barkley, entering his third season in the NFL, for a conditional seventh round pick, and as such ended the tenure of both Phillip Sims and Logan Thomas, as they were both cut. We can talk a little bit about the players who landed elsewhere, the players who didn't, and so on and so forth. But again, this is our all-Cardinals show. This is being recorded on a Monday evening, usually a night earlier than we do. But nonetheless, thank you for listening via download for Revenge of the Birds Radio. As always, make sure to visit revengeofthebirds.com, the SB Nation site for Arizona Cardinals fans, at the site that I myself run and write the majority of the material. There's Seth Cox, as well as a contributor there, our draft expert, our podcast co-host, and we have a bunch of other writers who are quite talented to give us the best Arizona Cardinals coverage you can find from fans, for fans. And, of course, you also have the best Arizona Cardinals community. This show is brought to you by Audible.com, where you can Audible.com, which is the internet's leading audio content provider. You can find yourself a free audiobook download by visiting Audible.com. Specifically, if you want that free audiobook download, visit audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds, where Revenge of the Birds Radio's listeners get a free audiobook download. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. So let's go ahead and start off our show. I've got Seth Cox on the line, as we always do. Seth, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on, as always, a night earlier. As in my case, the missus made some plans for us. It wasn't originally in the books for me to go to this particular show, but I guess that's how it ends up being. So we had to record a night earlier. In terms of how excited are you that we're actually in week one? We're actually getting real football. We're not down to playing third stringers, fourth stringers in games that don't matter. These games actually go in the books. They go on the win-loss record, and everything matters beginning now.
You know what? It's nice. It's nice that we... you know, it's for real, as you were. I mean, don't tell that to the guys that got cut or, you know, obviously the ones that made it, that the preseason doesn't matter. But for the fans, it doesn't matter, unfortunately. And now you know, we can actually watch some real football. You know, I've almost forgotten about the Raiders game at this point. So I think we're at a spot where we can just kind of sit back, relax, and see what happens with the Arizona Cardinals in 2015.
And this is not the point where the stakes have increased. We are now at the point where games matter. And there's that little bit of there's lots of hope entering this season, but there is that unknown. The Cardinals will open this weekend at home against the New Orleans Saints, a team that has been in the top 10 offense now for the past several years. I believe it's been at least in the top six for several years running. Productive, but who has in recent years had just awful defenses last year especially, which led to a debacle of a year for the Saints, who hope to bounce back with Drew Brees and then a whole bunch of other things. However, they've lost Junior Golette because of his, you know, being a knucklehead and letting him go. But things matter. We've only seen just a little bit of the starters, nothing more than really a quarter, and we've seen some really good things, especially out of the defense, and we've seen some really good things out of the offense, and then we had a little bit of concern, especially now the offensive line is not completely at full strength. But at least we know who the Arizona Cardinals are now. The head coach Bruce Arians likes to talk about the offseason that we're not the Cardinals yet. They're a bunch of guys that they are playing for themselves. They're not playing for the team yet because they are trying to find a spot on the roster. Now they're down to 53. Now it is the Arizona Cardinals. So kind of thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about Matt Barkley. I think that's the biggest kind of news to talk about, simply because it really kind of came out of the blue. Talk about the cuts that were made in terms of the roster. Going to talk a little bit of depth chart. Basically, let's see. What's the exactly? So cuts, surprises, the waivers, the players they lost, the practice squad, and the depth chart. So let's talk Matt Barkley. Again, we're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. And we're talking Arizona Cardinals football. This is the All Cardinals show as we enter week one of the regular season. And we're going to talk about Matt Barkley. Perhaps the surprise, at least for me, it was really out of the blue. I got home from the day job, mind you, the day job on Friday. I happened to sit down and all of a sudden I saw a rumor about the Cardinals working on a deal to acquire Matt Barkley from the Eagles, and then a few minutes later that the deal was done. And I didn't know what to think of it. I honestly am still not sure what to think of it. What went through your head, Seth, when you heard that news?
I had to click on, I think it was Jay Glazer's account. Wasn't it Glazer that first reported it?
Yeah.
Sure, it's like not one of those fake Twitter accounts that happen so often. And then once I saw it, I think the first thing you do, you know, the seven stages of grief or whatever, and you know, so I think the first thing was that, like, this couldn't be happening. You know, what's going on? I didn't understand it just simply because it didn't make sense in terms of what was going on with Logan Thomas. It looked like he had progressed from preseason one to preseason two. And then, you know, I don't know how many people have actually watched the Eagles and Matt Barkley, but I had, partially because I'm just interested in the Eagles as a whole. And partially because, you know, I like to watch Tim Tebow play. I'm a sadomasochist in that sense, so I enjoyed watching Tebow. And I watched pretty much all of the Matt Barkley throws this year, or this preseason. It was just shocking to me because it doesn't seem like he's an Arians, you know, that quote-unquote Arians quarterback. You and I have had the conversation about Phillip Sims already, and, you know, I question whether his arm was strong enough to be kind of that Arians quarterback. You know, and then you get Matt Barkley, and, you know, we heard rumors back in the 2013 draft that
The Cardinals are going to draft him at number 7. Who was it that said
that? Yeah, that's something crazy. My buddy Matt Miller said that, and I still give him crap for it. And then, you know, they end up, you know, that number 7 sixth round, they end up giving up the 7th round pick for him. He's in Arizona, so clearly they did have intrigue in him, not enough to draft him in the 4th round. But you know what? That also explains why they pulled the trigger on Logan Thomas in the 4th round, because that's kind of the sweet spot for guys you're not sure about, but maybe you want to take a couple minutes, you know, a couple seasons on to try to develop and see what they have. I guess the only thing we can reason this with and understand with is that Arians and Kime must not have seen anything in practice that was tangible or attainable for Logan, while they must have heard such good things about Matt Barkley in practice that they can overlook what he's done on the field in real NFL games. I mean, honestly, that's the only thing I can think, because, I mean, if you watch Barkley in his games that he's played in the NFL, he hasn't really been good. And so
that's putting it nicely. That's what it nicely said. It's meant, yeah. Don't mince words. He's been awful.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, and so there's obviously something that LT was not doing that Matt Barkley is or might be doing, or it could just be the fact that, you know what, they didn't see enough from LT, and the 3-year thing is out the window, so they're just dumping him, and now they're just going to start to churn the bottom of the quarterback roster, if you will, because of the perpetual injuries of Drew Stanton and just the advanced age of Carson Palmer. So, you know, combined with his injuries in general. So maybe that's what their theory is. Let's just bring in a bunch of, you know, and I don't mean this literally, but just a bunch of crap, throw it at the wall, see what sticks. And if something sticks, that's great. If nothing sticks, you know, we'll do it again next year.
Well, and in my case, and I will, for those of you who are listening perhaps for the first time or one of the first few times, you should know something about me. I grew up an Arizona Cardinals fan, and I'm not one of those fans that's always unhappy. I'm just angry with every move. In fact, I am a fence sitter for the most part, and I can see what things that the front off, I can see the logic in things. I'm not overly critical of any particular personnel move, especially when knowing the fact, well, goodness, there isn't anyone in terms of in the league that I know more of than whom I knew more of in terms of football. However, this is going to be the first. Levi Brown, I could see what they had. I defended Levi Brown. I didn't say he was an all-star, but we'll take this. This is the first time I have just really felt like I had no idea what are they doing? This is the dumbest move I've seen the Cardinals. And in the end, this is a third quarterback spot. But this move doesn't make sense at all for a number of reasons. First of all, why did they bail on Logan Thomas already? When he was drafted, it was a 3-year thing. They didn't see, obviously, they protected him the first year. We saw progress in this offseason. Now, Arians was critical of things that hadn't shown enough progress. But at the same time, when you draft a project, why do you bail on it after 1 year? Especially with a player like Thomas, who has some of the physical tools that you like. Especially who is the build, the arm strength, the sort of thing that you see from a guy that Bruce Arians wants. And you toss him to the side of the street for a guy who has, apparently, it looks on the outside, based on what you see in terms of what you want to have for Bruce Arians' offense, even less promise, and has accomplished actually a little bit less, because there haven't even been flashes on the field for Matt Barkley. For Logan Thomas, there have been flashes. You're like, wow, he can do some things. So when I see this move, I say, this doesn't make any sense at all. What in the world are they doing? You just waste it. You essentially justified everyone who questioned the Logan Thomas pick in the beginning in saying that was a wasted pick. And then before you've, you know, even after you've seen progress, you toss him to the side saying, oh, he's no good. And even though it was going to be a 2 or 3 year progress. He didn't see, apparently, from what they saw, there was nothing there to be a starter down the line. There was nothing there to even be a backup down the line, and they just kicked him to the curb. Now, as to Barkley, he doesn't have the size, he doesn't have the arm strength, and he hasn't flashed a bit on the field. For as much as Bruce Arians likes to be called a quarterback whisperer, what in the world are they going to make of Matt Barkley? In the end, it's not that big a deal, except we now see Logan Thomas go somewhere else, and you would hate to see him develop even into a serviceable backup and have the Cardinals have kicked him to the side, especially when he fit exactly what the Cardinals and what Bruce Arians likes to do offensively. And so for me, this move just doesn't make sense at all. And you essentially waste a roster spot on a third quarterback who doesn't know the offense. And what happens if it comes down to that quarterback three spot again? You have someone who is less adept. At least last year they had Ryan Lindley, who knew the offense, who knew how to call protections. He wasn't any good, but at least he kept himself from killing himself. Logan Thomas wasn't ready, but it looked like from what we saw in the preseason, he could be ready to take on at least that role. Matt Barkley, we haven't seen anything from.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the more intriguing questions, because like you said, if it comes down to it, God forbid, jeez. But if it comes down to it, what on earth are they going to do with Matt Barkley? Like, God forbid anything happens in the first 3 weeks. Dude's not going to be even close to ready to run a Bruce Arians offense in 3 weeks. Like, and if he is, then all the excuses for Carson Palmer, over what happened, you know, in 2013 go out the window, because a guy that's never been successful in the NFL came in and learned Bruce Arians' system in 3 weeks. And, you know, so it's just one of those things that, yeah, you know, if you got Barkley kind of at the end of the season to have on the roster for next season type thing, you know, but yeah, it's weird. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That's putting a lot of faith in a 35-year-old that's been injured, you know, three times seriously, and or had three major surgeries, and a backup quarterback that's never actually lasted when he's been asked to play. But, you know, it might also just be the fact that they said, hell, if Palmer goes down, we're screwed anyways. We don't like where Logan Thomas is, so let's just see what Matt Barkley can do, because we're going to suck anyways. If, you know, we're going to be a 9-7 team at best under Drew Stanton. So let's just figure out what we have to do in order to get, you know, to get that possible quarterback of the future. Oh, and if it doesn't work, it was, you know, we'll drop him before week 6 and maybe call Phillip Sims. I don't know. Maybe just grab somebody else. I don't know. But I look at what Denver did with Brock Osweiler, and I vividly remember last year people talking about how Denver needed to be done with Brock Osweiler in his second year, that he was just not progressing at all, and just get rid of him. This is stupid. You're wasting your time, blah, blah, blah. And then in this preseason, I've literally seen Broncos fans say, maybe it's time just to give Brock Osweiler the keys to the car and, you know, let him go and figure it out from there. And it's like, wow. Like, when you come from a stupid offense like ASU or Virginia Tech runs to a pro-style offense and you have to sit and learn how to be an actual quarterback, it takes some time. And you know, whether or not Brock Osweiler is actually good is another whole story. But, you know, if Denver is now comfortable with Osweiler, you know, maybe cutting the cord on Logan Thomas wasn't the right call. But again, like you said, it's QB3. God forbid if we're even talking about him in the next, you know.
But at the same time, but again, what we saw from Brock Osweiler, he has size, he has athleticism, and he has arm strength. And he's flashed a little bit. Even last year, he wasn't good, but he made a couple of throws. You're like, hey. I haven't watched much of Matt Barkley. From everything I've seen and heard, there hasn't even been any sort of flash yet from Barkley. Am I right? Is that an accurate statement?
For the most part, when you look at some of his throws, he's had some nice throws in the preseason. I remember when I watched, I think it was the Eagles' first game of the preseason. He just, because I don't think Sam Bradford plays. I think it's Sanchez and then Barkley. And he hit Jordan Matthews on a tight 15-yard window, moving out to his left really, really well. But something you and I talked about, and I guess this can be kind of how we end this discussion. If you suck in Chip Kelly's system, which is supposed to be like the most quarterback-friendly system in the history of mankind, and that's the only reason Nick Foles was, put up the stats he did, and he's not really any good, so the Rams are stupid for trading for him. If you suck in Chip Kelly's system, what are the chances that you're going to go somewhere else and just blow up? I guess that's where something we talked about personally, and I mean, that's a valid question. Like, if you can't succeed in a quarterback-friendly system with quick throws, and decisions that are made pre-snap a lot of time, how are you going to make it in an option route-based offense where you have to read defenses and sit in the pocket behind a fairly not good line right now? And figure it out. I don't know. It's interesting.
It'll be interesting to see. Hopefully, at the end, we never even have to see Barkley play. That would be the good thing. However, for me, there was intrigue, at least for Logan Thomas, to see next year, or to see after the season. Did the Cardinals see enough to where they would rely on him to be their number two next year? That's what for me, and we both talked about this, we felt that this was what this year's preseason was about. Could Logan do enough to show that he could be a number two? I thought personally that what we saw was good enough. Personally. He made enough progress. He was making reads. He was making good throws. He wasn't bailing in the pocket. He didn't look frantic back there. And it looked like he had a handle on what was the regular offense. But we'll never know. So we'll move on from that. Let's take a look at the roster cuts. And now we've got the 53-man roster across the board. I say what the highlights could probably be is, in the end, of course, they did go with three quarterbacks. There were a little bit of surprise at running back, because a guy that probably all thought was a lock for the roster and Robert Hughes was one of the cuts. They go with four running backs. They cut Kerwin Williams and they cut Robert Hughes. I was on my last roster prediction. I said, okay, I think I've done it. With Kerwin Williams returning kicks, that's enough to replace Stephon Taylor, since Robert Hughes is just a bigger version. Turns out that logic wasn't right. Robert Hughes is gone. Kerwin Williams is gone. And so they're going to roll with Andre Ellington, Chris Johnson, David Johnson, and Stephon Taylor. They went with six wide receivers, going with Britton Golden for number six instead of Jackson Shipley. No surprise there. Gerald Christian goes to injured reserve as he injured his knee in the final preseason game. They keep four tight ends. The four we always thought were going to happen. It's Fells, it's Nicholas, it's Gresham, and it is Ifeanyi Moma. Because it's kind of the wild card there. Offensive line, we finally got the word on Bobby Massey. He's going to be suspended for two games, not three. And so he opened the season on the reserve suspended list, which doesn't count towards the 53. The guys that are going to back up, we expect. So Ted Larson's on the roster. Bradley Sowell's on the roster. Lyle Sunline's on the roster. And who's the other? DJ Humphries is on the roster. They've got nine offensive line there. The defensive side of the ball went exactly as personally, as I expected it to. Matt Shaughnessy was cut. Alameda Teama was cut. A surprise there towards the end was Lorenzo Alexander was cut, but we knew he was among those cuts when we spoke last. They went with three cornerbacks only. And went with five safeties, with Chris Clemens being on there. Shaq Riddick stuck. Lamar Woodley is a starter. And so you've got a seven-man defensive line rotation. Frosty Rucker, Calais Campbell, Rodney Gunter are the starters, with Corey Redding, Xavier Williams. Then you got Josh Morrow and Ed Stinson. Were there any guys, I mean, look at those cuts. The roster, would you have done anything differently based on, if we're going to play GM, if we're going to play head coach, is there anything different personnel-wise that you would have done?
Not really. I mean, I know people have this affinity for Jackson Shipley, but, I mean, I'm not sure he has a place in this offense right now. And you and I have talked about Stephon Taylor before. There's a lot of things that we just as fans don't get, and special teams is one of them. So even Kerwin returning kicks doesn't really change anything, because Stephon Taylor is, you know, so vital. Whether or not they're actually good is a different point. So vital on teams, and so that, you know, I think that's why that one isn't shocking. I mean, I think the relative youth outside of Redding and Campbell Redding, Campbell, and Woodley.
And Rucker,
really,
and Rucker. You got Frosty in there, too.
Oh, yeah, Rucker. Yeah, so, I mean, maybe they do have, but, I mean, Shaughnessy and Lorenzo, I don't know, maybe because you brought in Redding and kept Rucker, that means you can, you know, do that, and brought in Woodley as well, obviously, so maybe that means you can do that. I mean, maybe the biggest things was keeping Chris Clemens, right? Like, we know they're going to use, like, 27 safeties on field at once.
Yes.
And basically just play an entire defense of safeties, but I think we were kind of surprised by that, because now you're going to be seeing a lot of, you know, or the question is, who's going to be on the field? Is it going to be Tony Jefferson, Rashad Johnson, Chris Clemens, or are all three going to be on the field when they go into sub packages? Because clearly, you know, they have to keep Matthew and Buchanan on the field just because of the fact that they don't have really any talent at inside linebacker in coverage, and they don't have any third or fourth cornerback. So, you know, they have to keep Tyrann Mathieu on the field. So those are interesting, just kind of ways they devise the 53-man, I guess you could say, as opposed to, like, shocking or, you know, anything like that. Four running backs isn't crazy, because I think the goal is going to be to get Ellington and Johnson as the one and two, and it's going to end up being Chris Johnson probably as the one, and then Ellington as, like, 1B, and then Johnson as, like, 3, David Johnson as the season goes along. But I could be wrong about that, too. And then the wide receivers, I think the most intriguing thing to me is what is Britton Golden's role going to be, because I think J.J. Nelson's better at the return game than him. But are they going to have Britton return kick and J.J. return punts, or you know, what's the plan going to be? Maybe that's the most intriguing thing to me. And then I think the weakest group, I know you didn't ask this, so I'm just going to say it. I think the weakest group right now is the tight ends, just because they're all so unknown. Like, we saw flashes of Darren Fell. Moma's never done it in a regular season game. Nicholas is hurt again, right? Like, he's not even...
He might be available this week. Both he and Gresham were expected to practice this week.
Okay, so yeah. So, I mean, you have two tight ends that are perpetually on the, you know, injured list, and then you have two tight ends that have basically played a combined, like, 8 or 9 games in their career. So you have, and throw Nicholas into that group, so you have Jermaine Gresham, who's coming off an injury, Troy Nicholas, who can't stay healthy, and then Darren Feld and Afeni Moma, who are both, you know, excellent talents, but they, you know, they haven't done it over the course of a season where you can be like, oh, yeah, I'm not worried about the tight end situation at all, because these guys are going to be stars. I think you just want to see development and kind of them not crapping the bed, so to speak, and
getting anybody hurt or, you know, making any boneheaded plays, which is going to probably happen. But the as little as possible would be kind of the mantra for me right now with the tight end position.
In terms of what I looked at the roster, now, I can understand why that, in fact, really I wouldn't necessarily have done anything differently except for trade for Matt Barkley. that's the one thing I wouldn't have done. If I were to keep three quarterbacks, I'd have kept Logan Thomas. And so that means you either had to go with four running backs or five receivers. Again, I felt that when it came down to numbers and they go with four running backs, Robert Hughes and Stephon Taylor became redundant. And Hughes was just a bigger version of him. And I think what they saw out of Taylor, he is a little bit more valuable in pass protection, and he's a little bit more valuable on special teams, and he's a little bit better of a runner, so you go that route. Even though we almost saw, which was interesting, because we barely saw anything out of Stephon Taylor on offense in the preseason. So I'm good with that. I thought perhaps Jackson Shipley would jump Britton Golden simply because of he was really productive. However, as many of the media guys, Mike Jarecki is one of them, said Shipley needed to improve on special teams. If you're going to be wide receiver six, you're going to have to be able to make a living there. Golden can return. And Shipley showed he could return kicks, but Golden apparently has some value in some of the other in the other facets of the game where he can be a gunner. He can get down in kick coverage and punt coverage. And he's a little bit more, he's faster and he's more athletic, which makes him a little bit more valuable overall. On defense, for the listeners, this is the reason why the Cardinals can afford to go with three corners and five safeties. And it's for this reason alone. Their third corner is on the roster is Justin Bethel. But as rotations go right now, Justin Bethel will not see the field on defense. Even though he was, the Cardinals did go with seven defensive back sets last year. Justin Bethel was that seventh defensive back. However, he has not been the seventh defensive back during this offseason, and that was Chris Clements. So if you look at it this way, you need depth at cornerback. As of right now, you've got it. Because you've got Patrick Peterson and Jerrod Powers who are on the field all the time. The slot corner, that's Tyrann Mathieu, who is technically a safety. So you've got a corner on the bench who can come in no matter the situation. If Patrick Peterson comes in, Bethel can play that position. If Tyrann Mathieu gets hurt and he can't play slot, well, then in nickel situations, Powers will slide into this slot and Bethel will play Powers' position. If Powers gets hurt, Bethel can play there. So he becomes the cornerback depth. You don't need anyone beyond that unless there is a second injury. You need more. Now, the thing is, in sub packages, the Cardinals go with all four of their safeties. It appears what it will be is that Tyrann Mathieu and Dalen Buchanan will never leave the field. They'll in base, they'll be at safety, and then they'll slide to slot corner for Mathieu in their dime set, and then Bayon Buchanan will slide to inside linebacker, which means Tony Jefferson, Rashad Johnson are on the field. And that means if they only have four safeties, they have zero depth after that. If there's an injury, they're in really deep, they're in deep doo-doo because they don't have anyone else to come in. And so what they have is one player on the bench in Chris Clements who can come in and take care of if one of those players gets injured. And Clements is a guy who can play safety, and he can also play that inside linebacker. That's where we've seen him as well in second team sets. He would be the Dalen Buchanan, the dollar linebacker. So the reason why you go with three corners and five safeties is because when in their dime sets, that way they have one player on the bench at safety and one at cornerback who could come in if there were an injury. And that's how that works. In terms of the personnel, I have no problem with anything they did. Josh Morrow becomes a cheaper, younger, more athletic version of Matt Shaughnessy. Ed Stinson sticks around. Perhaps the one concern, and you brought it up a couple of weeks ago, that you might go with is that your nose tackles are two rookies. You've got Rodney Gunter. And you've also got Xavier Williams. On the plus side, they're not the only ones who can play tackle, nose tackle. Corey Redding can do it. He's a veteran. Ed Stinson can do it. He's got a year in the system. So it isn't completely lost, but you've got, that's the only real concern. You've got two guys who've never played a down of actual NFL football in the regular season who you're going to be counting on at nose tackle. But then again, they might play 30% of the downs as it is.
And I guess I'm wondering, as this goes on, what their expectations for Gunter are, because I feel like, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like it's odd, like they're almost reversing the way they should be working them, and it should be kind of Williams with the first team, or, you know, that quote-unquote starting defense, and then Gunter coming in and getting more plays. I think if you use Williams in the Dan Williams role, and then you know, that, what, 34% of snap, 35%, whatever, and then use Gunter for maybe the other, you know, like 40% of snaps, then you have, you know, 25 to 30% of snaps you have to figure out, and maybe that's, you know, that's where you have Redding and Stinson, and you throw Morrow, you know, you kick down Campbell, you do different things. But I feel like it's almost backwards at this point, using Gunter as the nose and then having Williams come in to spell him. But it'll be interesting how it works in the regular season,
especially because it didn't seem like that's what they wanted him to do early on. My speculation is this, because he felt like he was going to be a more of a disruptive player playing their three technique. However, it might be this. They like the potential at nose tackle and are giving him one job this year rather than playing a whole bunch of positions where he might be more likely to mess up. Okay, you're really raw. We know what you're going to do down the line. So this year your focus is be disruptive in this particular job. So I can see why they're doing it. I just don't see that's going to be his long-term position. I don't think that's what he's going to do after this year.
Yeah, which is why I thought it was kind of interesting. It seems like maybe, I don't know, maybe stunting growth, maybe not. I mean, he's on the field, so who cares? But if you're gonna two gap, and I probably want Williams there, and then let Gunter come in to, you know, be that penetrator and disruptive force as you talked about. But, you know, whatever. As long as they're on the field, I don't really care where they use them. So.
An interesting fact with the offensive line, you know, granted, Bobby Massey's going to come back after two games, which means there'll be a decision to make. Someone's going to have to be cut. Now, there's some speculation, well, would it be that sixth receiver? Would it be Britton Golden? I don't think so, because then that would put 10 offensive linemen on the roster. The way it's currently constructed, the way it's set up in the backfield with the depth, Bradley Sal almost has to be the guy that they cut, because in terms of his salary cap, things. Now, I have to go back and double check. Well, I know this for certain. You can't get rid of Ted Larson. It would be pointless. Once he's on the roster, he's on the roster there game one, his salary is completely guaranteed for the entire season. Plus, he's the guy that's going to be in there for Mike Iupati. He's their number one guard depth right now. Secondly, Bradley Sal, I do not believe, is a vested veteran. I'm not sure where that kicks in. Now, I heard this third year, after the third game. So it might happen then. But if Massey comes back after week two, that would mean they could cut Bradley Sal and he wouldn't have his entire salary guaranteed for the season. But from what I understand, it's not that much. They're not going to cut Earl Watford. He's the guy that's starting in place of Massey. They're not going to cut DJ Humphreys. And while they could cut Lyle Sinline, that would mean Ted Larson would be your backup center, which was the whole reason why they brought Lyle Sinline in, because Ted Larson wasn't doing any good at center. So that's essentially what's going to happen.
Well, and you kind of hit it on the head. So the only reason they keep Sal is if Humphreys is just a complete dumpster fire, right? Because then they have to keep Sal to back up Del Deer, and they'll be the swing tackle, as it were. And then, you know, when Matthew's back, then, you know, Matthew's the right tackle, or probably not, because Earl Watford's going to ball out. But you know, and then Matthew or Watford are your backup right tackles, and then you have Humphries as your backup left tackle, which is different. You know, most NFL teams don't do that. But Sal, even if he's guaranteed, I don't think he is, because he's not a vested bet. He's only year three. So, but even if it is guaranteed, it's like $750,000. So, if you cut Ted Larson or Lyle Finline, it's like double or triple that, right?
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
I mean, unless Finline is just completely shot, which it sounds like he could even start still, doesn't it? Didn't they say that? Like
That is what Bruce Arians said, that Lyle could overtake Shipley this week.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'll be interesting. Because, I don't think it's, like, a guarantee, but I would venture a guess that Bradley Sal's the odd man out. Because carrying 10 offensive linemen means that, you know, DJ Humphries is basically Logan Thomas, and you just don't want him to see the field in 2015. So, I mean, and maybe that'll be the case. Maybe they'll just keep, because they can't, you know, there's just absolutely zero way they can practice on DJ Humphries, so they'll just have to keep him on the active roster, but then, you know, keep him
inactive every week.
Yeah, inactive every week, basically like they did at Watford a couple of years ago and last year. So, if they do that, then I think we read into it being more about DJ than anything else. But if they cut Bradley, then, you know, we obviously know it's just because Bradley's just not very good. No offense, Bradley. I know you like to search your name on Twitter, so no offense.
When we look at they're kind of an interesting, this is one of those lesser stories. The Cardinals the last couple of years have brought in some guys via waivers. 2013, it was, I'm not going to go all the way back to the Ken Wisenhunt days because it's really pointless at this point because of different staff. But 2013, the Cardinals are awarded a pair of players through waivers. That's Alameda Te'amu and Bradley Sal, both who've made very important contributions that first year. Te'amu being absolutely dominant, splitting time at nose tackle with Dan Williams. And Bradley Sal, who became their left tackle starter for the last 12 games of the season. 2014, last year their waiver claim was Thomas Kizer. That didn't work out so well. He was kind of terrible. But this year, I don't know how many players they placed claims on. They were awarded zero players, and this year they had two players claimed. Now, last year they tried to sneak sixth-rounder Walt Powell through waivers, and they get him on the practice squad. The Jets picked him up. This year, Logan Thomas, he doesn't make it through waivers. He gets claimed by the Miami Dolphins, who apparently have had their eye on Thomas ever since the draft. So he heads to Miami, and a safety, Harold Jones-Quarte, a guy who the Cardinals wanted to put on the practice squad, who played more snaps than anyone else on that Cardinals defense during the preseason, he ended up going to the Bears. Kind of the interesting thing is there's twofold, at least I think I see from the lack of waiver claims. One is that there are less holes to fill as you get to be a better team. Second, as you improve every year, you move further and further down the waiver priority. So even if there are players you want, it becomes less and less likely you get them.
Well, and I was going to comment, the Browns are, like, desperate for safety help. So Corley was one of the better ones in the preseason in terms of just the overall
super athletic. Super athletic. He was a guy that you think maybe could have a shot to be in the rotation next year if Rashad Johnson hits free agency and leaves, or Tony Jefferson, who's a restricted free agent, ends up going elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was just one of those things. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And, it was a gamble they had to take, and it just, you don't want to blow up because who knows what he becomes, but, you know, if he becomes anything, then and maybe it is something that blew up in their face. So,
well, and the Logan Thomas thing is something I want to pay attention to, especially since now that they've given Tannehill some money. I'm not sure how many people believe Ryan Tannehill will be the long-term answer there. Logan Thomas might get himself a shot if he does improve, and with the type of offense that they run, maybe he'll have an easier time catching on.
Well, and I definitely think Tannehill did get paid, right?
I believe so. I thought he did.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they're bringing in Logan to be the backup, And here's what we know as Cardinals fans. You know, if you don't have a good backup quarterback, it does matter. Eventually it will. And so I just think that the Cardinals were kind of done with Logan, and so the Dolphins and I believe the Chiefs also allegedly put in a waiver claim, but I'd have to look at the draft order to see if that's true or false.
That'd be an interesting factoid, considering a couple of things. Pro Football Talk had the Chiefs. Now, I personally saw the NFL transactions, and it was definitely the Dolphins. I don't know where PFD, they just mistyped something, because then there was a certain ESPN person who using the Pro Football Talk report said that Thomas ended up with the Chiefs and ended up having a slightly embarrassing moment on social media for a bit. But I know for a fact, because that same NFL transactions and the NFL media site, Aaron Wilson started. I saw early Sunday morning he was rattling off tweets about who was claimed. So I should probably check that list. And what do you know? I saw that Jones Quarte was picked up by the Bears, and Logan Thomas, which I already saw from Aaron Wilson, was in fact went to the Dolphins. So I can say for one that it was definitely the Dolphins that said spin bit, but I don't know where the Chiefs were probably further down in the priority, I'm pretty sure. So they might have put a claim in on him.
Yeah, which is interesting, because a lot of people thought that was gonna be Philip Sims, and you and I tried to explain, that's not really going through here. Yeah, the Chiefs were a lot lower down, so they could have. Maybe they did, and or maybe that, I don't know. But anyway, so you and I try to explain that's really how that works. Philip Sims is a guy that teams will probably offer a practice squad spot to, but that didn't even happen. He's going to go try out for.
Yeah, he's getting tryouts, but that's about it. And that's really what it should be, because he went undrafted out of college. He didn't get signed among the priority undrafted. He made the Cardinals offseason roster on a tryout, and that's fitting. And something fans need to understand, of those cuts that players, that teams make, very few of them go claimed on waivers, and most of them happen to be the more established younger players. Now, vested veterans don't go through waivers. They automatically became free agents. But anybody in their first, second, or third year goes through waivers. The worries that Jackson Shipp was going to pick up. No, that wasn't going to happen. Harold, I was surprised that Jones Quarte, but that probably is just a case of a team that was, just, as you said, was just desperate for safety help.
Yeah, the Bears were desperate. So while I was surprised, in the sense that, I didn't think the team with the seventh priority would claim him. That's what happens when you don't have any defense. So that happens. It wasn't shocking, but. And I wasn't shocked that Logan Thomas got claimed. You and I have talked about before, he made strides. And in the NFL, nine times out of ten, maybe not nine times, maybe seven times out of ten, natural talent and ability wins out over, composure and whatever other attributes we're putting on Philip Sims and why he...
Especially when a guy like Thomas with that sort of measurables and that measurable talent has had some flashes, because there were definitely some flashes this preseason.
Oh, yeah. And so, and same thing with Kerwin Williams. I like Kerwin. He's a nice back. He's a nice back to have on the roster. But, dude isn't an every down back. And the NFL clearly thinks the same way, because, he did produce those two 100-yard games against two pretty good defenses.
Except I will add this caveat that people seem to forget. At the time, the Chiefs were the absolute worst team against in yards per carry allowed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, and he had those two 100-yard games, and nobody cared. That's just kind of how it works. I think fans, and I wrote this in the comment section after, I think it was the Logan Thomas got picked up, Philip Sims got a workout, or maybe it was a different one, I can't remember, but it's just interesting how even you and I, you know, we see players and we kind of say, oh, you know, he's kind of flashed. And then you get, you know, it gets down to the NFL guys and they're like, no, he didn't really flash. He looked like crap. Like, we don't care. Like, we're not going to put a claim in and waste a 3-week roster spot on, you know, Kerwin Williams or Jackson Shipley or, you know, all these guys. Like, we're going to, you know, especially since, as you've pointed out numerous times, when it comes to why they didn't make the Cardinals active roster, if you're getting claimed, you're like bottom three on the 53, so you better be able to contribute somewhere on special teams. And you know, with Shipley and Kerwin, that wasn't happening. So, you know, if you're not good enough to make the Cardinals and contribute on special teams, then you're probably not going to be good enough to get claimed and on special teams. And on the other side, the Cardinals, you know, they probably put in a claim here or there. It's very rare that teams don't put any claims in. But like you said, they're better now. They have more talent, and the places that they don't have talent is kind of an NFL-wide type thing. So, you know, you're not going to get an outside linebacker or a tight end that's, you know, necessarily going to clear waivers and be able to come in and contribute, because you're going to have 31 other teams probably putting in the same waiver claim. So it's just common at this point, as the roster turns and whatnot, that the Cardinals would not get a waiver award, because, you know, they're a good team. And then, like I said, the two spots that you can really, like, key in on, say, okay, they probably could use, like, one more body here just to see. Those aren't spots that the NFL, you know, the rest of the NFL is loaded at. So those are just spots that are hard to fill if they did put a claim in on anybody.
And let's take a look at the actual practice squad. They named it Monday afternoon. Some of the names were sort of out there, and there were a bunch of players that were suspected would happen. Six players who were on the training camp roster, the offseason roster, are back. Kareel Brooks, cornerback, tackle Rob Crisp, linebacker Gabe Martin, Antoine McClain, guard, Jackson Shipley, receiver, and Kerwin Williams, running back on the practice squad. And then the four guys that were added who were not with the team are the infamous Brandon Bostic, tight end. If you recognize the name but don't remember who he is, think the Packers-Seahawks NFC Championship game and that onside kick that was botched. That was Bostic. His job was to block. Jordy Nelson's job was to catch it. Bostic saw the ball, tried to catch it, bounced off his chest, and Seattle recovers the ball. Seattle goes down the field. Seattle wins and goes to the Super Bowl. That's Brandon Bostic. Leon McFadden, former third-round pick for the Browns. Cornerback Robert Nelson.
I liked Leon McFadden coming out of San Diego State 2 or 3 years ago. But he was in a pretty talented secondary. The Browns' secondary wasn't bad for a little while. So it's interesting that he got released, because they lost some players in that secondary. So it's just interesting that he got released and couldn't make a roster on a team that was kind of in flux in the secondary.
Although he was actually on the San Francisco roster in the preseason, so I don't know. I don't know the background for him, but I believe he was drafted originally from the Browns, I recall, if that's not right.
So then he's been released before, so which is even more shocking, because the 49ers secondary is mostly not good. So, no, I mean, like, that's not a bad thing, but he was the guy I liked coming out of San Diego State, so chalk that one up as a miss for me.
Robert Nelson, former Arizona State guy, cornerback, who was undrafted rookie with the Browns last year. He joins the Cardinals practice squad. And Lawrence Okoye, defensive lineman, was with San Francisco, more known in the world as being a track and field Olympian, track star with the discus throw in England, as he has the national record for discus. He, 6'6", 305-pounder, is now on the Cardinals practice squad. In terms of the surprises, perhaps, of the players who were retained, there might be one surprise, and that's Antoine McClain. Personally, I thought that spot would have gone to Anthony Steen, perhaps Steen did not show what, and I personally was rooting for him. I happen to know him a little bit and his represent and his in his agent team, and was rooting for him. In terms of I told you off the record a kind of an interesting story about Robert Nelson coming out of ASU. That's not something for the airwaves. I'll have to say this: the staff at Arizona State, so one of the coaches, former coaches, his secondary coach when he was at Arizona State, I know him. And one thing he said about Robert Nelson, he said that physically he's really raw. He has really great hips. And just hadn't developed well enough because he hadn't played the position long. He's small. He's kind of like Tyrann Mathieu. He's undersized, 5'8", 5'9", 175 pounds. But he's a guy that can play safety, play corner, kind of like Tyrann Mathieu. But the coach that I know who coached him at Arizona State said there's a lot physically to like about Nelson outside of his lack of beyond his lack of size.
And I wasn't shocked about McClain because when you go back and watch him preseason, he is better than Steen. So I think Steen got a bye kind of last year because he had the injury that he was kind of trying to fight through and everything. And then he went on the IR, right, last year?
No, he was on the practice squad. But he actually had a shoulder injury, and when he finally got healthy, that's when he got bumped up to the active roster.
Okay, yeah. And so I think they were kind of in our camp, because you and I both liked him.
Yes.
I think they were in our camp where it was like, okay, he's obviously lacking some power right now, but let's give him the offseason and he'll be healthy and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then McClain came in and actually played better. So then they were probably like, well, we've got Larson, who's a bad center and a not good guard. We've got Sennelein, who's an average center, and we got Shipley, who's kind of like Larson. We probably don't need a fourth one of those guys. So let's go with somebody with some athleticism and upside and kind of raw power in McClain and see what happens. Just a theory, but I was more disappointed in Steen this preseason than probably as a fringe roster guy than maybe anyone else. And how he performed. And that's just because that's, again, like a miss on my part. So, like, when guys don't do well, I blame them, not myself.
And a final look, and that's on the depth chart, just released on Monday. Not a whole lot of surprises there, but it is now official. Earl Watford is the starting right tackle in place of Bobby Massey. I think we both are very excited about that. Since Bradley Sowell, we kind of know what he is. He's a good guy to have on the team, not a guy you want spending a whole lot of time on the field. Darren Fells and Ifeanyi Moma are your two starting tight ends. I think that's the one notable thing other than that on offense, and that is simply because Troy Nicholas and Jermaine Gresham haven't been healthy. Other thing to note, and this is actually a little bit less important than others, is how you see the running back. It's Andre Ellington, then Chris Johnson, then Stephon Taylor, and David Johnson is officially the fourth stringer. However, they use the running backs differently. They have particular packages. We know that David Johnson, for more pass things, anything where they're going to be used, will probably in the game instead of Stephon Taylor because he's simply more athletic. Anything that surprises you there on the offense?
No, but don't tell me prayer doesn't work because Earl Watford is starting at right tackle. So I'm happy about that. the depth chart is kind of, just one of those dumb things that you kind of have to look at, but overall, we know kind of how Arians has worked throughout the years, or throughout the 2 years that he's been here, and the depth chart is kind of
a suggestion.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, like I said before, I think the goal is Ellington and David Johnson. I think kind of in the end, the reality is going to be Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington, and then sprinkled in of David Johnson. Because we do know one thing about Bruce Arians, and that's if you get your quarterback hit on blitz pickup as a running back, he'll basically just act like you don't,
you don't exist anymore.
Yeah, exist. So I think, and not that David Johnson's going to struggle with that, but it will be something that he needs to work on going forward. But more so, I think you're going to see just Ellington not be able to be that 18 to 20 touch guy. So they're going to, you know, I think their goal is to have Ellington be the workhorse, quote unquote, and Johnson be the other guy, or David Johnson be like the, you know, 12 touches a game guy. And I think as the season goes along, you're going to see Chris Johnson be the 18 to 20 guy, and then Andre Ellington be the 12 touch guy, and then whatever's left over is going to be David Johnson's scraps. I hope I'm wrong, because I hope David Johnson just blows up and is, you know, and is everything that we said he could be, which is, you know, basically Matt Forte, if he gets everything worked out in his own way. But, you know, it's a big jump what he's going from in, you know, D1AA and NIU to the maybe the best division in the NFL against, you know, some of the most talented teams in the NFL.
On the defensive side of the ball, really no surprises. The one interesting thing is that you see the two starting safeties, that strong safety is Tony Jefferson over Deion Buchanan, and then a free safety, Tyrann Mathieu over Rashad Johnson. However, I wouldn't be surprised to see Deion and Tyrann Mathieu on the field and base to start things off. That's kind of how we saw things in the preseason, where Tyrann never left the field and Deion never left the field. So it'll be interesting to see if that's how things... I think that's kind of the plan. Jefferson and Johnson will definitely play a lot, since the Cardinals tend to go with their nickel-dime set over half the time. We're looking like 60% of the time. So they're going to get plenty of playing time. The other thing to note, Lamar Woodley, now the starting outside linebacker opposite Alex Okafor, which is... he's the strong side guy, so he's going to be pushing the pocket, the stronger guy that goes up against the tight end. That side of the field, Marcus Golden will back him up, which makes sense since Marcus Golden is essentially, you know, Lamar Woodley's second coming of him, or James Harrison, as Bruce Arians likes to call him.
Well, I'm interested in that because I thought Martin was better than Golden in the preseason. And that's just a development thing, like, right? You know, Martin's been in the system for a year. You know, he got to work as an outside backer and a defensive end, and now, you know, he's focused on defensive end. So I was surprised, and maybe, you know, again,
he's listed as the weak side guy, so...
Yeah, and that's why it was interesting to me, because I'm interested to see how that rotation goes. Is it going to be Woodley-Golden, or is it going to be Woodley-Martin coming in for Woodley? It was pretty interesting to watch. That was the only thing I was interested in, because, like you said, the rest of it's kind of...
That kind of wraps things up. We've got the New Orleans Saints coming up this week. I have not yet booked it, but I hope to get someone from over at Canal Street Chronicles so we can do a preview show week one against the New Orleans Saints. Anything in particular you're looking for this week? I know I want to see how the starting defense does against an always very productive offense.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the pass defense because, I mean, I'm not sure, like, I can say this, but I'm just going to say it. I think the Cardinals are going to be one of those teams that just consistently has a good run defense now, as long as people stay healthy. But I'm interested to see the pass defense because, you know, the pass defense was trash last year. And that was partially because Patrick Peterson really struggled. They didn't have anybody to cover tight ends still, and they had no pass rusher. So... what happens now where Deion's kind of, you know, growing as a coverage guy, Peterson's healthy, Matthew's healthy, and then Okafor's healthy to start the year, and they have, you know, a should-be improved opposite Okafor of Woodley, Golden, and Martin. So I'm just interested to see what's going to happen because you're going to get the chance to you know, you get to work on your pass defense real quick in game one and game two because, you know, the Bears still throw the ball all over the field. So I'm interested to see that coming out this week because as much as I want to say this looks like kind of a great opener for the Cardinals, slam dunk type thing, it's Drew Brees, and you never know what's going to happen with Saints. So,
and It'll be interesting to see. Granted, the Saints have always had kind of a not been very good over the past couple of years defensively. Hopefully the Cardinals can, and to their benefit, they don't have Junior Gallette to face, so they should be able to put some up. Ideally, they'll be able to produce on offense and get that into a rhythm. Folks, that wraps up our all-Cardinals show for week one of the Arizona Cardinals. For Red to the Birds Radio, that's your host, Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll talk to you again perhaps later this week. I'll be on with maybe Dave Cariello from Canal Street Chronicles. If not, next week, Seth Cox and I will be on for our Cardinals show for week two. Have a good day. Good night, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/revengeofthebirds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.